Well, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, December 26th. I'm going to do something a little different this time, just jump right into two major topics, because next week I will have my 2010 outlook for the stock market and the geopolitical front. But for now, hopefully you had a good Christmas. There were two major items that wrapped up over the past week, at least on an interim basis, and that is Copenhagen, the global climate summit, and healthcare debate, at least on the Senate side. Virtually everyone associated with the UN summit in Copenhagen walked away saying, "What was that all about? Nothing was achieved. Nothing, though many of us are happy for this. There are no legally binding targets on emissions reductions, let alone anything that can be enforced, meaning the last few years have been totally wasted, as it remains a developed world versus the developing one. Business, especially in the United States and Europe, was looking for guidance and leadership so they can plan ahead, as successful businessmen are wont to do, but received neither. Because Copenhagen was such a failure, though, there are increased fears of protectionism, and the blame game is now on. Brazil's President Lula said President Obama wasn't prepared to make sufficient cuts, which in turn led to other countries avoiding commitments of their own. Britain accused China of hijacking the talks in its refusal to support binding cuts. China said it was Britain's fault. Maybe we'll have another opium war between these two. Environmental groups were furious, with Greenpeace U.S. head Phil Radford saying President Obama was, quote, the man who killed Copenhagen. Friends of the Earth said, quote, climate negotiations in Copenhagen have yielded a sham agreement with no real requirements for any countries. And then there was the behavior of Obama himself. One account from Agence France-Presse, quote, chaos and farce reigned at the birth of the climate accord, agreed to by a clique of leaders, with statesmen going missing, critics crying foul, and hacks stampeding on vain hunts for U.S. President Barack Obama. Fatigue fermented a feverish cocktail of human emotion as Obama claimed to have staved off a default in the dying hours of global warming talks in Copenhagen. While Obama's team clearly had an interest in spinning the climax of the talks to the young U.S. president's advantage, they revealed a succession of events more apt to a French farce than a major world summit. Frustrated at deadlock in the talks, largely over China's refusal to accept a transparency regime to monitor developing states' emissions, Obama vowed to have one more run at getting this done. Desperate for a foreign policy win, Obama drew the line when a comparatively minor Chinese official, Yu Jingtao, an expert on climate change, showed up at a meeting instead of Premier Wen Jiabao. "I don't want to mess around with this anymore. I just want to talk with Premier Wen," a senior aide quoted Obama as saying. Obama also decided he wanted to speak to leaders of major developing powers seen in China's camp. Well, this set off a search for the likes of Indian Prime Minister Singh, who some said was already at the airport believing talks were over. But Wen's team said they were ready to meet Obama, and it was then Obama's aides realized Singh hadn't left and that he was with Wen, Lula, and Jacob Zuma of South Africa. AFP continues their report. Obama headed straight in. "Mr. Premier, are you ready to see me? Are you ready? Mr. Premier, are you ready to see me? Are you ready?" Obama cried. U.S. officials insisted the president did not barge in uninvited, but was merely showing up on time for his talks with Wen. That's too much. There wasn't even a seat for Obama, so he pulled one up and sat next to Lula. "Hey, Lula," said our president. Charles Hurt, New York Post. Obama later tried to put a positive spin on the meeting, saying a meaningful and unprecedented breakthrough had been reached. "We have come a long way, but we have much further to go." Others derided the conference as a failure that did little more than provide third-world dictators like Venezuela's Hugo Chavez and Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe a platform for again bashing the United States. That was Charles Hurt. And then you have the issue of the developed world coughing up $100 billion for poor nations to help them limit emissions over the coming decades. Fat chance the American taxpayer will stand for putting up, say, $10 billion of it in short order. As for health care, the Senate got its 60 votes. After all, as Nebraska Democratic Senator Ben Nelson picked up permanent funding for much of his state's Medicaid tab in exchange for his vote. The annual bill is said to be $45 million plus forever, plus Nelson gained tax breaks for the likes of Mutual of Omaha. Earlier, Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu raked in $300 million in largely one-time benefits for her state if she'd vote for the Senate bill. But it's Nelson's deal, one that the other 49 states will now have to pay for, that has many Americans all riled up. As Republicans railed, these backroom deals are nothing more than the worst form of corruption. Though I hasten to add, Republicans have, of course, been guilty of same over the history of our republic. So now the Senate version must be reconciled with the House's, and a conference between the two will take it up around January 20th, following the recess. It seems highly unlikely a final version will be passed by both houses in time for President Obama's State of the Union speech. There are some elements of both plans that are good, such as no denial of coverage for pre-existing conditions, but the reality is the cost will soar far above the estimates the Congressional Budget Office came up with in scoring the proposals. Take one critical item, Medicare. Medicare is at the heart of the packages, as in severe cuts in it are to pay for the lion's share of other programs. But Congress has never allowed Medicare to be cut even one dime. Sure, the bill could get approved in largely its current form, but then later the Medicare cuts could be rescinded, and it's suddenly another half a trillion added to the deficit. Robert Samuelson, Washington Post. The various health care proposals represent atrocious legislation. To be sure, they would provide insurance to 30 million or more Americans by 2019. People would enjoy more security, but even these gains must be qualified. Some of the newly insured will get healthier, but how many and by how much is unclear. The uninsured now receive 50 to 70% as much care as the insured. The administration argues that today's system has massive waste. If so, greater participation in the waste by the newly insured may not make them much better off. Samuelson continues, Obama's plan amounts to this, partial coverage of the uninsured, modest improvements, possibly in their health, sizable budgetary costs worsening a bleak outlook, significant unpredictable changes in insurance markets, weak spending control. This is a bad bargain. Health benefits are overstated, long-term economic cost understated. The country would be the worst for this legislation's passage. What it's become is an exercise in political symbolism, Obama's self-indulgent crusade to seize the liberal holy grail of universal coverage. What it's not is leadership. That was Robert Samuelson. Editorial, Wall Street Journal. And tidings of comfort and joy from Harry Reid, too. The Senate Majority Leader has decided that the last few days before Christmas are the opportune moment for a narrow majority of Democrats to stuff Obamacare through the Senate to meet an arbitrary White House deadline. Mr. Obama promised a new era of transparent good government, yet on Saturday morning, Mr. Reid threw out the 2,100-page bill that the world's greatest deliberative body spent just 17 days debating and replaced it with a new manager's amendment that was stapled together in covert partisan negotiations. Democrats are barely even bothering to pretend to care what's in it. Not that any senator had the chance to digest it in the 38 hours before the first cloture vote at 1 a.m. this morning. Even in World War I, there was a Christmas truce. The rush, secretive way that a bill this destructive and unpopular is being forced on the country show that reform has devolved into the raw exercise of political power for the single purpose of permanently expanding the American entitlement state. An increasing role of leaders in healthcare and business are looking on aghast at a bill that is so large and convoluted that no one can truly understand it. That's editorial Wall Street Journal. Healthcare costs for business will absolutely soar, and for the young. A centralized system means far less choice. The deficit is going to soar. Don't be an idiot and fall for the talk, it's going to be reduced. But perhaps George Will summed up best in his Washington Post column, the simultaneous climaxes in Copenhagen and Congress. The former's accomplishment was indiscernible, the latter's was unsightly. Will continues, it would have been unprecedented had the president not described the outcome of the Copenhagen Climate Change Summit as unprecedented, that being the most overworked word in his hard-working vocabulary of self-celebration. actually the mountain beneath the summit, a mountain of manufactured hysteria, predictable cupidity, antic demagoguery, and dubious science, labored mightily and gave birth to a mouselet, a 12-paragraph document committing these signatories to make a list. A list of goals they have no serious intention of trying to meet. The document even dropped the words "as soon as possible" from its call for a binding agreement on emissions. At least the president got a health care bill through the Senate. But what problem does it solve? Obama's word. Not that of the uninsured, 23 million of whom will remain in 2019. Not that of rising health care spending. This will rise faster over the next decade. Nebraska's Ben Nelson voted for the Senate bill after opposing both the Medicare cuts and taxes on high-value insurance plans, the heart of the bill's financing. Arkansas's Blanche Lincoln, Indiana's Evan Bayh, and Virginia's Jim Webb voted against one or the other, yet they support the bill. They will need mental health care to cure their intellectual whiplash. George Will continues, before equating Harry Reid to Henry Clay, understand that buying 60 Senate votes is a process more protracted than difficult. Reid was buying the votes of senators whose understanding of the duties of representation does not rise above looting the nation for local benefits. And Reid had two advantages, the spending, taxing, and borrowing powers of the federal Leviathan, and an almost gorgeous absence of scruples for principles. Principles are general rules, such as Nebraska should not be exempt from burdens imposed on the other 49 states. Principles have not, however, been entirely absent. Nebraska's Republican governor, Dave Heineman, and Republican senator, Mike Johanns, have honorably denounced Nebraska's exemption from expanded Medicaid cost. George Will continues, during this long debate, the left has almost always yielded ground. Still, to swallow the Senate bill, the House will have to swallow its pride, if it has any. The conference report reconciling the House and Senate bills will reveal whether the House is reconciled to being second fiddle in a one-fiddle orchestra. Just a quick note on Iran. I have all kinds of details in my Week in Review column this week. But just if you're listening to this podcast on Saturday, take note that there are major demonstrations taking place this weekend, especially on Sunday. At least that's the projection from yours truly. Turning to Wall Street, it was a terrific holiday-shortened week. I have to admit, I thought the economic data, coupled with reduced trading volume, may have led to more volatility, but it was essentially straight up for stocks in an orderly fashion as the Dow Jones tacked on 1.8% to close at 10,520, its best finish since October 2008. Ditto the S&P 500, which rose 2.2%, while NASDAQ climbed 3.3%. The S&P is now up 66.5% off the March lows and has erased half its losses from the October 2007 peak. Once again, I'll be back with you on Saturday, January 1st. I'm going to try to get it January 1st. If it's not the 1st, it'll be the 2nd. I promise you that much, and we'll go over the 2010 outlook. Have a great week.